Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big-time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd. On the Double with the Double S Express.
Good afternoon and good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this version of On the Double with the Double S Express. I'm Sean Boyd, alongside Sean Wally. Sean, how you doing?
Good, man. Great to be back on the Double, and we have a very special guest waiting to join us here, so why don't you introduce him, Sean?
Well, it is my pleasure to bring in, this is an MLB all-time great for me. I mean, you know, being from the he's from Elk Grove and went to Valley High School and Cosumnes River and on to Arizona State, of course, and doing some great things in college there, but playing 12 years of baseball. Fernando Viña is on the line. Hey, Fernando, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good, guys. I appreciate you guys having me on, and it's pretty cool. Sean Squared here, but the pair of you guys, huh?
Figure it's easy to remember that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you guys for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, hence the name, the Double S Express, man. And so, but hey, man, thanks for taking the time out of your busy schedule and you know, coming on to the show. Hey, why don't you tell us a little bit on what's going on with you these days, what you're doing, and, you know, I know you're doing some great things in the community. So, what's going on with you these days?
The last couple of years I've been working as a baseball analyst for the Oakland Athletics in Oakland. This year, taking a little break from that and coaching a little more and running some academies that I do for the kids and just trying to instill as much as I can into these young kids and kind of give them what I have and what I went through and give them a path kind of to dream about what it takes to get to where I made it. So I'm just trying to help these kids and show them that they have a great opportunity to be the best they can be and take advantage of the game, you know, of baseball.
Man, you know, of course, baseball being, you know, America's national pastime, I mean, it is a beautiful sport. And it's a great thing that you're doing because it's not every day that you have people such as yourself that's just willing to take the time out and teach the young kids what it takes to get to the next level.
Yes. Definitely. I mean, that's what it's all about for me at this stage of the game. Obviously, I've played for over 12 years in the big leagues, and when I started, obviously, playing baseball, it was my dream and my love to hopefully someday make it. And, man, I never thought I'd play one day in the major leagues and ended up playing almost 13 years. So truly blessed. Truly blessed. And like I said, my parents came from Cuba, and my dad played in Cuba, so it was something that as a little guy, I always wanted to be a baseball player. I always had a ball and a bat in my hand and a glove, so whatever I could do at this point, obviously, because I don't play anymore, I miss the competition part, but I really, truly enjoy looking at these kids' faces and their eyes and see them so intense and locked in of wanting to be somebody and do something with themselves in the athletic field, which makes me feel good because there's so many bad things in this world that these kids can go, the roads they can go down that hopefully I can get to them a little bit and help them steer them in the right way to make things better for them, not only them, but for their families and their parents that do so much for them.
Man, that's great. That's great. So, walk me through this. Here we are. Here you are, 1993, and I believe that's when you started with the Seattle Mariners. Kind of walk us through what it was like in that first at bat as a Major League Baseball player.
Oh, it was undescribable, to be honest with you. There's really no words to describe it because it was such a special moment for me. If you can imagine, the year before I was in Class A ball with the New York Mets, so to jump from A ball to the major leagues, I was fortunate enough to do that with the Seattle Mariners. They took me in the Rule 5 draft, and all of a sudden I found myself in Arizona in spring training with Lou Piniella as my manager and in the same clubhouse as King Griffey Jr., Randy Johnson, Norm Charlton, Jay Buhner, I mean, you name it. Omar Vizquel took me under his wing. So I was with these type of names that all I used to see on TV, you know, all of a sudden I was getting dressed with these guys and going out on the field with them. So very special time. And that first game in the Kingdom, I'll never forget it. I mean, I got a double for my first major league hit and hit it down the right field line on that turf there at the Kingdom. And, you know, I thought I might get thrown out at second, but, boy, I was full head of steam and ran, you know, went head first, ran into the shortstop's knee, and if you can, lo and behold, imagine, guess who it was? It was Cal Ripken Jr. So I went into him real hard, and I was safe, and all of a sudden it was a double against the Orioles, and Cal Ripken Jr. was right there, and I hit him, you know, I ran into him pretty good to make it just by a hair to be safe.
Yeah, and you said the hit was down the right field line, correct?
Yes, right down the right field line.
Yeah, so that must have caromed off of what they called Walla Walla, the
there
big ball in right field.
Yes, sir, yep.
Yeah.
So,
definitely going down memory lane there on the first at bat there. So you went on and had a great career, played 12 years, and, man, 1998, you're with the Milwaukee Brewers. And I believe that was, man, you hit 311 that year. I believe that was the year that you went to the All-Star game. Is that correct?
Yes, that was the year I made the All-Star team. And, yeah, that was a great year for me. Everything kind of came together, and I had some good things happen to me. And to top it off, to be able to make that All-Star team was special.
And so who were the likes on that team, on the 98 team?
Trying to think. We had McGuire there. We had Greg Vaughn. We had so many top players. I can't think of them all from both teams. But it was in Colorado at Coors Field, and obviously everybody knew about Coors Field and how special it was coming into the major leagues with the new stadium and stuff. And it was a special moment. I remember I want to say I was 1-for-1, and I also walked, and I made a play or two, so it was an incredible moment for myself, if you can imagine, for a guy that, you know, I didn't expect to play ever in the big leagues, and all of a sudden I was playing in the big leagues, and not only that, but making the All-Star team.
Man, great stuff. Mr. Wally, any questions?
Fernando, Sean Wally up here in Washington State, and you mentioned your All-Star appearance. You also won 2 Gold Gloves. Were either of those your shining moment in the big leagues, or was it your first hit, your first game? What stands out to you in your career of highlights?
I think, I mean, for me, it was the first hit. Obviously, was a special moment for me because I actually, you know, once you get that hit and you've arrived and you're in the Kingdom and you're part of this ball club with these superstars on it, with Ken Griffey Jr., Randy, everybody on that team, was a special time for me. But I'm a guy, I've always taken a lot of pride in my defense, and to be able to be recognized in the league as the Gold Glove second baseman for a few years and be at the tops of turning double plays in that nature, it made me feel real good, because I always tried to not only be an offensive weapon and do what I could to be on, you know, a weapon on the bases and be a pest for the other team, but I wanted to make sure, if I wasn't hitting, which you're going to go through slumps and you're going to go through tough times, I wanted to make sure I made some plays to steal hits from the other team also. So took a lot of pride in my defense, took pride in, you know, made me feel good of hitting the first inside the park home run at AT&T Ballpark in San Francisco, and also the first inside the park home run in Miller Park in Milwaukee. So those type of things, really, you look back now, they were really, really special, and I, you know, to get Gold Gloves made me feel real good because I worked hard for it.
Yeah. When you think back on your career, you played for a number of teams. Do you consider yourself more a part of that team versus another, or that you were just a major league player because you did play for 5 different organizations?
I really think Milwaukee was a special place for me because the Midwest, the people are so good to you, and the fans were so supportive. I'll never forget that place because that's where I got a chance to be an everyday ball player, and I ended up playing there for 5 years. But then leaving there was kind of a stepping stone going to St. Louis, playing for Tony La Russa's ball club, the Cardinals, which was, oh, man, it was it was not only a special place, but all of a sudden you're winning and you're in the playoffs every year. So that took it to another level. The stadium was packed every night. There's like a college atmosphere there in St. Louis. Tremendous fans, the best in baseball. So St. Louis really stands out for me because I was able, able to win some gold gloves, and every year we were in the playoffs, and playing for Tony La Russa is nothing like it. I played for Phil Garner in Milwaukee, which was very, very special for me and a great time. And then when you go play for Tony La Russa, man, the guy's he's as good as it gets to be prepared and to be one of the top managers and to be able to win a World Series in both leagues. And that's what I was able to do and be part of with Tony La Russa and the St. Louis Cardinals.
Yeah, you mentioned Fernando Tony La Russa. Of course, he has Bay Area ties as well. Do you get a chance to connect with him from time to time or possibly meet? Or?
Yeah, we definitely keep in touch. We text all the time back and forth here and there for the holidays or when he's in the Bay Area. We might have lunch at a certain point. Now he's traveling a little bit working for Major League Baseball, because he's always on the go and he's a fiery guy, so he keeps busy. But we definitely keep in touch, and it's somebody that, you know, when you come through and you've made it to the top, it's somebody you never forget, because he was part of that to help me get to where I needed to get to.
Yeah, and you were mentioning postseason in 2002. Yeah, man, you batted in the postseason .395. That's on fire,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah, I loved it.
Fernando,
I enjoyed
you mentioned...
it. I mean, I knew... Go ahead, John.
You mentioned your television analyst duties currently that you're working on and you've done in the past. Looking at the Oakland A's, you get to see a lot of the AL West, and right now they're taking on Texas tonight. What are your thoughts on the AL West, and will anybody catch Texas?
You know, I think so. I think you can never count out the Oakland A's because they have the young starters and what they did last year. Nobody thought they'd win the division. I mean, you know, going to the end of July with 10 games back, and they ended up beating the Rangers. So, you know, it's a competitive division. If you look in the winter, what the Angels did, how much money they spent and put on the board there for their team, you would think they would be at the top. But that's the beautiful thing about the game. It's not on paper. You got to play the games on the field. And, you know, I like the A's. I think the Rangers have come down a little bit. Their offense is still good, but I don't think their pitching is good as it was, or their relievers. So, I think Oakland has a good chance to stay up there with in the West, and I also like Seattle. They're doing some good things there in Seattle. They're putting some players together. They're getting some pitching, and I think little by little they're getting a winner in Seattle with the Mariners. So all in all, that division, AL West, is a solid division, and I think it's a division that you might get a wild card and a division winner in the playoffs there.
Yeah, you'd mentioned, Fernando, that division. I mean, right now it is – there's a lot of parity involved, even though the Rangers, I believe, are 8 games up on second place Oakland. But you do have Seattle that is starting to wake up a little bit. And so, you know, it's just unfortunate. They've run into a juggernaut, meaning the Seattle Mariners, against Cleveland, which happens to be the best team in baseball right now. Would you agree on that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the way they're playing, you know, what they've done to be able to add some players over there, and Terry Francona, the new manager, he's brought in a new mindset in that clubhouse, and boy, you can tell they got some winning guys going on, and they're all about team, and it's showing on the field. They got Michael Bourne there in center field now, and they've added some good pieces, and they definitely added some good character guys. So Swisher's there also, and these are guys that know how to win. I think that's rubbing off in that clubhouse, and it's showing right now, even though it's a little early, but every game matters, and whether you're in April or May. So that's a team to reckon with throughout the year, I believe.
You had mentioned speed was a good part of your game. You tried to create havoc on the base pass, and that's exactly what the Indians did over the weekend against Seattle. That Michael Bourne, he is definitely a speedy, speedy player.
Yes, he's a guy that creates a lot of havoc. He takes a lot of pitches. He makes you work. He's a pest on the base pass because, I mean, he can still – at any time, he can go first to third at any time. So he's instant offense. From he gets on base as a single, it could quickly turn into a triple, and all of a sudden you're in scoring position at second or third. So he's a guy, as he goes, those Cleveland Indians go, and I think they spent a lot of money for him. He knows how to win. I think that's rubbing off throughout that lineup. They're all feeding off each other. And like I said, Terry Francona, what he's saying in that clubhouse, they listen, and that's a guy that's been around, and he's won World Series in Boston. So this guy's a very respected guy, and it's showing right now in Cleveland.
With your television broadcasting background after the majors, obviously, was there anything getting into that surprised you or that you didn't know went on and now is obviously an everyday occurrence for you?
Yeah, it was. I mean, it wasn't easy for me because fortunately, ESPN gave me an opportunity right when I got out of the game. So I was working for Baseball Tonight in Bristol, Connecticut for 3 years. But it was tough. I mean, because all of a sudden, I didn't get too much training. I got hands-on training, basically on-the-job training. So it was tough. I speak Spanish and I like to speak real fast. So I think when you get on the air and you want the audience to stay with you. I had to really work on slowing down, you know, a little bit. I'm a fiery guy. I like to speak a little fast, so I got to slow everything down so the audience can stay with me. So just different things that you key on how to study correctly, where to go to get the numbers and the stats and, you know, things to back up all your points. So that was fun, but I learned little by little and, you know, as in anything, the more reps you take, the more you get into it, the better you get, and you know, I was blessed to be able to do it.
Now, was your expectation level as high as what they expected you to do in Bristol? What I mean by that, of course, you're a baseball player, and so I'm sure that they were expecting you to come in and just, you know, right off the cuff say these particular things, but it sounds like, you know, you pretty much had to put ducks in order just like the rest of us do.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not easy. It's I think people see and like the both of you, people listen to you guys and think it's easy to just get on the air and start talking about sports and, you know, creating conversations and doing things the right way. But it's not easy. There's some work involved, and you got to be knowledgeable. You got to know how to study and do what you need to do and continue to get reps at what you're trying to do to make yourself better and better. And I think when I got to ESPN, they were fair with me. I think they had some tutors that you would work with to help you through. And you know, I knew the game. I loved going over highlights and talking about the game and seeing it happen and being able to explain it to the audience. So that was no big deal. I think it was just, you know, more of just how to present it. You know, instead of trying to look at three different points you want to get across because you only had 30 seconds, you needed to pick one and really just work on that one and really establish yourself and give as much input on that point instead of trying to, you know, spread yourself too thin and try to get three things out there. So I think learning and doing it kind of helped me just pick one thing. You really go after it and give it all you have and give all the knowledge you got on it. I think that's what helped, and you keep it simple that way.
That's an awesome bit of insight for anything you do in life, whether it's broadcasting, baseball, or whatever you want to be great at.
You're right. Yeah, good point.
Fernando, before we let you run, with your work with kids and clinics, if there was one key thing that you could give knowledge to them on what to do to be their best, what would that be?
You know, I think for me, when I talk to these guys, is never let nobody tell you can't do something. I think that's the biggest thing. I think, for myself, you know, I was smaller when I was growing up, and they, you know, a lot of people told you, you can't make it. You're not going to be strong enough to get through. But I pumped iron and lift weights. I got stronger. I got faster. And always have a dream. I think when you talk to these kids, make sure, have a dream, and whatever you do, like you said, Sean, keep it simple and work hard at it. I don't care if you're a doctor, if you're working at McDonald's, or if you're working at Baskin Robbins, whatever it might be, keep it simple and really put your head to it and focus and be the best you could be at what you're doing at that time. And I think that'll take you a long ways, whether it's in sports. And what I love is telling these kids in sports to do that and have that mindset, because you know what? If you do it in sports, you buy into a team atmosphere. That's going to help you the rest of your life, whether you make it in baseball or football or basketball. That's going to help you in the job front, and employers are going to love to hire you because you have that mindset and you've been through a team atmosphere and you know how to work and kind of take 25 guys or 15 guys, whatever it might be, and bring it into one goal, and boy, you could be so strong, and 25 of you could turn into one and nothing could stop you.
Good stuff.
Awesome words of advice and insight from former Major League Baseball player Fernando Viña down in Sean Boyd's neck of the woods, somewhere around the Elk Grove area in NorCal. Fernando, thanks for your time. Thanks so much for joining us on the Double.
Yes, thank you guys, both of you, for having me. I appreciate it, and God bless. Take care of yourself.
All right, you too, Fernando.
There he goes, Fernando Viña. A good talk, some great insight about baseball and also life in general.
Man, you know, Fernando is probably one of the most down-to-earth guys that you could ever meet. I mean, you know, we're always running across each other's paths, and, you know, I meet him in the grocery store or whatever, and, you know, he's always, you know, just there and, you know, being willing to listen, you know, just sitting down and talking with him, helping out in the communities. You know, I think Fernando is being just a little modest there on some of the stuff that he does. I mean, he does a lot in the community, and that's what you need. You know, if we're to develop today's youth and get them in the right direction and down the right path, you know, it can't just be about you, and that's the way Fernando is. He takes his mind off himself, focuses on others, and, you know, that's what it's all about, Sean.
Absolutely. Great insight from not only Fernando Vigne, but Sean Boyd right there, talking about what Fernando is doing in the community and his thoughts on making it great in whatever you do.
Yes.
All right, so interview one is wrapped up here tonight on the Double. We're going to get to break, and we will come back in just a minute or two with guest number two. You're listening to On the Double with the Double S Express.
What's my image?
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services, platinum service without the platinum price.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. Fernando Vigne was on with us, and now we are going to move on to our great guest, number two, big-time guest, as we welcome in John Kitna to the program. John, how are you?
I'm good, man. How about you?
How you doing, John? Welcome to the show, man.
Great. Thanks.
Hey, I know you're taking some time out here of your busy schedule, and you know, I know you have the Lincoln Abes that are preparing for an exciting season. So, how'd the practice go today?
We can't even do spring ball until June 3rd. We're not like the rest of the country.
Okay.
We don't get to do football until 1st of June.
So no weight room or anything?
No, we have weight room. You know, that's every day. And the guys, you know, actually we did a lot of conditioning today, kind of into our conditioning phase here for the next 4 weeks. But the kids are doing great, and colleges are starting to come in and check them out and recruit them and stuff, so that's good.
That's great stuff. Man. So, you know, where do we start, man? I mean, you had a 15-year NFL career. I mean, that is just excellent in anybody's book. And, you know, I like to tell the story, and I know you'll probably laugh at this because I tell this story to everybody. I said, man, there are times where John would come over. You remember the times you'd come over to Eastern Washington?
Yeah, man, I remember well.
Man, just hang out, and we're in there, and we're playing, you know, Sega Genesis or whatever, and
yep.
Tecmo Bowl was coming on, and man, there was a time that you looked at me and you said, man, I'm going to be on this game. And I thought, man, are you kidding? Come on, John, let's just continue to play the game, man. And boy, it just goes to show you perseverance and just being locked in. You know, I'm so proud of the things that you've done, but man, I'm telling you, making it to the league, that's good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it was a blessing. You know, I think lots of people dream it, and certainly I was no different than that. And I just think I was too naive to figure out that I wasn't supposed to make it. And, you know, then obviously gave my life to the Lord in 1993, and that just helped my focus even more and helped my perspective on things. And God opened some doors for me with the Seahawks, and this was a great opportunity with Coach Erickson, somebody who believed in me from day one. And then all of a sudden it turned into a 16-year career. So, you know, can't complain. And it was a ride like no other. And you know, I enjoyed every minute of it. And so It was a huge blessing.
John, Sean Wally up here in the Northwest in Washington State as well. And I'm curious if you can take us back to the end of your Central Washington days. And Dennis Erickson, if I've heard this right, you were throwing for one of your receivers that Coach Erickson was there to watch, and he noticed you. And take us through that and how you got notified that they wanted to bring you into camp.
Well, he actually, they brought us over, myself and Dennis's nephew, who played for us his senior year at Central. And so he brought us over just to kind of work us out as a favor and hopefully get us a look by somebody. And I was actually thrown to his 13-year-old son, just standing in spots. And, the day went great. I tell people all the time, it was probably the greatest day I ever had throwing a football. It was just one of those perfect times. And then from there, they worked me out one more time and then signed me right after the draft as a free agent.
And so, John, you'd mentioned earlier how you, in 1993 you gave your life to the Lord. And of course that helped you and propelled you to the next level as far as your focus, as far as your vision is concerned. There's another young man that's been playing the past couple of years and actually is looking for a team right now, Tim Tebow, he wears his heart on his sleeve and his spirituality on his sleeve. Explain to us, what are some of the things that you feel are going through his head right now? Because, of course, before there was Tim Tebow, there was you. You went through a lot as far as, people trying to understand who John Kitna was. So kind of explain to us, what Tim Tebow, what you believe Tim Tebow is going through.
Well, I think, obviously I would never try to put myself in his shoes. I mean, he played at Florida, won national championships, won high school national championship, did some just amazing things with the Broncos that year, taking them to the playoffs and riding that ultimate high. And then, having to go live in the fishbowl, which is New York. It's been quite a ride for him. And the one thing that if I had a chance to talk with him, just to define yourself. Don't even let the people that are your backers define you, the people that are seemingly in your corner, but define yourself to people so that people know exactly where you stand. And I think he does a pretty good job of that, but I just think there's a lot of people that speak on his behalf. And I think it's important to make sure that you control the message that's going out about you.
That's good stuff. And those are words that you've always lived by and you played by. I mean, if anybody knows who you are, I mean, man, you just go out and you get the job done. You're the lunch bucket type of a quarterback. You get in there and you just clock in and do what you need to do. In 1999 with the Seahawks, that was, one of the best years that you had. You had 23 TDs and, you did some great things. What was going on then? It was your third year with the Hawks.
For me at that time, it was, I just always expected to do stuff like that. And I never, really up until that point in terms of playing, I never experienced much, much failure, honestly, playing. I mean, I never want to a high school championship or anything like that, but we won in college and I felt like I played pretty well and then got into the league, and every time I got a chance to play, I felt like I played well. And so, in 99, I just felt like that was an extension of that and my first opportunity to be a full-time starter and things like that in the league. So, what's going through my mind or what that was like is, I just felt like this is how it should be. And unfortunately for me, never really got to get back to that point, but, I have no complaints about my career.
John, who were some of the people that were most influential in your NFL career? Would it be a Warren Moon? Might it be a quarterback coach, maybe a head coach, an offensive coordinator?
Well, I really think probably three people. John Freese, who was here my rookie year, was here my first couple years with the Seahawks, and then you know, he was just somebody that just let me ask him question after question. You know, from there, Ken Zambezi, who I had as a coach in Cincinnati, he was just tremendous quarterback coach. And then Mike Martz, who I had for 2 years in Detroit, and just learned so much football from him. That was the funnest time I ever had those 2 years.
Yeah, you mentioned Mike Martz, the 2 years, I believe, 2006 and 2007, I believe.
Yes.
Man, just getting a chance to air it out, 4,000-plus yards for you, man. I mean, that's, you know, hey, that's great in anybody's book.
Yeah, it was a fun couple years, and more than anything, he's somebody I consider a friend and I still spend a lot of time talking to. And so I just really love the way he treated me and just enjoyed my time.
Well, John Swift,
I know that now, you know, being a head high school football coach, you know, people would say, man, there are a lot of things that you could be doing right now. So why go back and to the high school ranks and coach?
Well, I just think, you know, for me and my wife, it's always been the dream of ours. The NFL happened. It was that was something we wanted to do, we wish we could do. The more realistic dream was the, you know, coaches and teachers in the high school and to have an effect on the kids there and hopefully have some sort of impact. And so for us, it's always been kind of one of the things that we have dreamed about. And then when I retired from the NFL, the Lincoln job opened up, which is obviously where I'm from, and we both have a heart for those kids there. And so it seemed like that was the Lord's calling on our life. And we learned a long time ago, don't run from the Lord's calling. And it's been crazy. It's been fun. It's been disappointing and frustrating and discouraging at times, but more than anything, very rewarding. And watching these young men grow in front of your eyes, it's just been a blessing.
And so I understand also, so you're not just the football coach there. And you're not just blowing a whistle in PE. I believe you're a math teacher. Is that correct?
Well, I teach one math class, and actually next year I won't have any math classes. I'll just be doing weight training with our football players, and I do a lot of public speaking, and I have four kids of my own, and to try to add math on top of coaching and mentoring these young men, it was just. It became to a point where I felt like I was going to have to start compromising things, and that's not something I'm willing to do. And so right now we're going to take a step back from math and just do weight training for right now.
John, what are some of the things
math last year and this year?
What are some of the things you're trying to instill in your players and teach them not only on the field but in life as well?
Right. We really try to, the mission of our program is to train young men to be real men. And our world nowadays is a world that gives you very confusing messages on what a real man is. And we really feel like a real man is defined by four pillars. And it's an acronym of the word real. A real man rejects passivity is the R. The E is a real man empathizes with others. The A is a real man accepts responsibility. And the L is the real man leads courageously. And we really try to define that for our players and what that looks like and frame it up and help them understand how they can be real men. And inside of that, obviously, you're teaching character, integrity, and perseverance for these young men. And the one thing we always say is, everybody wants to be a leader. Hardly anybody knows what a real leader is. And the number one thing a real leader is a servant to others. And so we're trying to teach our young men those things.
And John, you definitely walk the walk. And, you know, this is something that's been on your heart and been in your heart, again, since 1993 and then going back to college. You guys had a dynamic team going to Central Washington University. Of course, there was yourself. And I believe one of the gentlemen who you work with as far as positive and motivational speaking today, Eric Bowles.
Yeah.
And so, tell us a little bit about the motivational speaking that you do in the areas and how that impacts people.
Yeah, you know, the things that I really try to focus on is, you know, what I just talked about, true leadership, how to get the most out of the people that are underneath you, and then, you know, how to as an individual, how can I be close to my ceiling, closer to my ceiling than my floor, and by that we mean, you know, how can I maximize my potential? So many people we feel like operate at less than their potential because we settle for what is considered good by the society or the world standards, as opposed to what our maximum potential is on an individual basis.
John, what do you anticipate the football season being for you in the fall, and how do you think league play will go, and what do you look for in 2013?
Well, we're excited about our football team. We feel like we lost five starters in terms of seniors, but we feel like we have good young men to step up and who have played and have experience. So we feel like they're going to step into some significant roles for us. And we have some guys that we feel are Division I, four, five-star type athletes. And so we feel really good about our team. It's the second year in our program, so it's not new to the guys, which is great. And we're excited to get the season going.
And so you emphasize team a lot, John. And so how do you keep these guys even keel? You mentioned that you have some colleges that are taking a look at some of the young men that you have. How do you keep them focused? How do you keep them level and getting the task at hand and facing on the league?
Yeah. Well, you know, that's a new challenge that we have facing us right now. And we have to attack that as coaches. And obviously, me being the head coach, we got to start dealing with that. And that's a good problem to deal with. You know, how to stay humble, how to stay even keeled, because for so long these young men have, quite honestly, been beaten down by society, beaten down by others, beaten down by people in their lives that are close to them. Beaten, you know, it's just some kids that are very damaged in terms of their psyche, and to have some positive things, we want to embrace them and then teach the kids how to deal with them. So, you know, one of the things that we're going to do is, you know, continue to remind these young men that to reach greatness, it's an everyday affair. You can't take days off. You can't take steps backwards to reach your maximum potential.
And of course, you know, God, Lincoln is truly blessed, man, to have somebody such as yourself that comes back and gives back. And of course, there's another player who you played. I believe you were a senior. He was a freshman, Lawyer Malloy, who, you know, is also a Lincoln Abe, you know, so the two of you guys definitely coming back and giving back to Lincoln, these guys, there's a tremendous upside, I believe. And so, you know, just continue to do what you're doing, man, and it's definitely going to pay off.
Thank you.
You know, John, a couple of tidbits that really mean nothing, but maybe somebody will get a chuckle out of them. I got your autograph from you personally when you were a Seahawk at one of the team shop autograph sessions, and I still have it to this day, so thank you for doing that. And then about 8 to 10 years ago, I worked at a paint store you might know in Tacoma, Kelly Moore there on South Tacoma Way, Washington Street, actually, and I sold your mother some paint. I was pretty impressed.
Yeah.
I was able to do that.
Yes, good. All right.
Man.
John, thanks a lot for your time tonight. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. Right. Hey, thanks again, okay. John. And yeah, man, we love having you on here. And hey, continue doing those things and standing in the gap, brother. Because man, I'm telling you,
you know,
there. I know you don't do it for the fame or anything, and it's just God's will. And man, just continue. Just many blessings to you. And again, and we appreciate it definitely.
Okay. Thank you.
There he is, John Kitna, current head coach, Lincoln Abe football in Tacoma, Washington, 15-year NFL veteran at quarterback.
So, yeah, man, yeah, John, I just, man, every time I talk to John, I don't talk to him as much as I should and staying in communication, but, you know, another one, I talked about Fernando earlier, and John is right along the same lines, you know, just giving back to the community. And, you know, a lot of the times we hear of players, once they, you know, once they go on after retirement or whatever, that they're doing their own thing, and these guys are not that. These guys are giving it back a hundredfold, and, you know, I believe in the next 10 to 15 years we'll start to see a lot of the fruits of the labor, if you will.
You know, I tell some people this story and another one that I maybe should have mentioned when John was on, and it was back either summer of 2005 or 2006. I get a phone call from my co-host, Sean Boyd, and he says, it's 4th of July. He says, you won't believe where I'm at. I was like, what? What are you doing? I hear all this noise and good times being had. And he said, I'm at John Kitna's 4th of July party barbecue, and we're having a great time. And I was like, wow, really? And it was really happening. Sean Boyd was hanging with Kitna and having a good time.
Man, you know, it's just a real good circle to be around. And, you know, it's not anything to be braggadocious about. You know, it's just, you know, you put yourself in the position to do the right thing and good things are going to happen. And, you know, for guys like John and other players that are doing the same thing, we start to see that in some of the other players that come out into pro ball. It's not all about just physical talent. It's about nurturing. It's about the guidance. It's about, you know, repetition and doing things over and over again. And so, you know, putting yourself around those types of people will definitely help you.
That's the voice of Sean Boyd in Elk Grove, California. I am Sean Wally in Richland, Washington. This is On the Double with the Double S Express. Great guest today, Fernando Viña, John Kitna, with some fabulous insights on how to be great and how to do good things. And if you want to call in and ask a question, the number is 888-429-5471, 429-5471. Who wants to be the very first caller taken here on the Double with the Double S Express? And while we had some awesome guests, great things happening in the lives of Fernando Viña and John Kitna and the people they touch, couple of odd things going on in the sports world, one being out east with RG3. Sean, why don't you tell us about that?
Well, man, there's some interesting things going on in the world of the NFL, one being that of RG3. And so, of course, you know, he's been doing some great things as far as his rehab is concerned, and yes, he did get injured against your Seattle Seahawks. And, you know, since then, he's made this vow of just, you know, becoming 100%, and people have migrated around RG3. And so the weird thing that's happened as of late is, of course, he's getting married. That's not weird. He's engaged to be married to a beautiful young lady, and they registered at Bed Bath & Beyond. And so the Washington Post caught wind of this, put it out there for the whole public to see, and the result was something astonishing. I mean, fans of all around in RG3's camp started buying these gifts and showering Mr. RG3 with these gifts. And man, the result. You go ahead and finish it, Sean, because I can't even believe, you know, the end result. So,
well, you see RG3 in front of a tower of boxes, a mountain of boxes. All the gifts he has received from random folk, fans of his, from Baylor, from the Redskins, sending him gifts, people that he doesn't know. He didn't ask for anybody to send these things. Thanks to the newspaper, the Washington Post, he's getting these things that, you know, he doesn't necessarily need. Yes, they were on his registry, but that was for people attending his wedding. And here the entire world is showering this guy with gifts.
So what would you do, Sean? I mean, you know, I don't know what I would do, actually. I kind of have an idea, but you know, what would you do? You're getting gifts. You're a millionaire getting gifts. You know, what's going on in your mind? What's your thought process?
I think we need to see how this plays out because it's not done and over with. Maybe RG3 does something great for every fan that sent him a gift. People are out there on Twitter saying he should return them, saying he should give them to charity because he's, quote, rich. He doesn't need them. Well, that's not necessarily fair, and he didn't go out asking for them. thanks to the Washington Post, he's getting them. And maybe he will end up donating some or all, or, you know, sending something fabulous, an autograph, a picture, something to the people that did this out of the kindness of their heart.
Yeah, that's kind of what I believe also. I believe that that RG3 is just kind of playing with the media and playing with the fans and, you know, just kind of, you know, pulling everybody along, thinking that, you know, he's going to keep these gifts and, you know, they're all going to be his and don't worry about it and, you know, all those types of things. You know, he tweeted back, you know, people think just because I'm rich I shouldn't get this kind of stuff and SMH and all that kind of stuff, but I think he's just kind of pulling us along and he'll do what you're saying and he'll go out and give, you know, some of these gifts to, you know, some of the fans.
Switching gears to the NBA, where the playoffs are in full swing, and the San Antonio Spurs ran the Memphis Grizzlies right out of the building.
Man, that was a huge game. Of course, San Antonio Spurs, hats off to them for taking care of my Golden State Warriors, you know, 4-2. And the way they did it and the way they're going about things, you know, a lot of people thought, including myself, that San Antonio would wear out as the playoffs go on, and they're getting nicked up, and they're getting older, a little long in the tooth, and they're just moving right along and taking care of business. Last night, you know, beating the Memphis Grizzlies handily, 105-83. Tony Parker had a great game last night. He had 20 points. Danny Green with 16 points, and Kawhi Leonard, 4-5 from behind the arc. You know, I mean, they just lit it up, balanced scoring all around. Matt Bonner had a great game, and there was a Gary Neal sighting. So, you know, game one in the books for the San Antonio Spurs. Of course, game two tomorrow. The West will have two games before the Eastern Conference actually plays their first game. But I think that that Memphis is in a little trouble if they can't make the adjustments. Last night, Zach Randolph had 2 points. You know, one of the shining moments for the Memphis Grizzlies was Quincy Pondexter. And we all know Quincy Pondexter, 17 points last night, of University of Washington fame. You know, had a great night last night, shooting 6-11 and 5-9 from behind the arc.
You mentioned that the Eastern Conference doesn't get going until after two games are done out west, and there's already a war of words going between the Pacers and the Heat.
Man, yeah, you know, Coach Vogel for the Indiana Pacers. Man, this thing is really getting out of hand. And one of the things that you and I have to adhere to, Sean, is making sure that we're giving everything, you know, 100%. As far as information that we get, we have to make sure that it's accurate. Of course, we have our own opinions, and you know, we have the right to our own opinions, just as our fans do. But as media, you know, our fans look to us to give pertinent information. And the way this is playing out with Coach Frank Vogel, he is being made to be the bad guy in LeBron James' eyes. Now, of course, LeBron having a title, an NBA title, you know, a lot of this could be to where LeBron is actually trying to get his team to come out of the gates in game one and just take care of business from there on out. What I'm talking about is Frank Vogel yesterday in a press conference was saying that, you know, they're getting ready to play the Miami Heat, and, you know, they're the next team that's, you know, that's right there, you know, that they're going to play to get to the NBA title. Well, LeBron has taken that and spun that, and the media has allowed that to happen. And so, you know, we have to be careful with some of the things that we say. But I think it makes for great theater. I think that Wednesday when these two play, that it's going to be tremendous. I know for a fact that these two teams hate each other. You know, you go back to last year with some of the antics that went on between Indiana and Miami as far as the physicality is concerned. So this is going to be a great, great Eastern Conference final.
How much of this do you think is just bulletin board material, them wanting to get under the skin to maybe tick them off a little bit, maybe to get a little flagrant foul here or there?
No, I think some of it is bulletin board material, but, you know, at the same time, these two teams hate each other. And, you know, through the regular season, they split. And so Indiana taking care of business at home, and then Miami, you know, adding on to their win streak. I believe the Indiana Pacers was the 17th win for the Miami Heat on their way to 27. And so, you know, no, these teams definitely don't like each other at all.
That is the voice of Sean Boyd. I am Sean Wally. This is On the Double with the Double S Express, show number 2. Just a few more minutes left here. You do have a chance to be our very first caller. Number 1, go down in the history books. Dial 888-429-5471. 888-429-5471. Sean Boyd, you think someone's going to call in and be number 1?
Man, I know eventually there's going to be a lot of callers coming in, and so I'm not really worried about that. You know, like I was mentioning before, is just making sure that we do the best that we possibly can as far as bringing in accurate sports and exciting sports. And so today's show was great. You know, again, having Fernando Vigna on the show and John Kitten on the show, having more guests in the future, you know, the excitement is definitely building. And so, yeah, you know, we're going to have callers calling in all the time, and it's just up to us to make sure we're getting the word out.
And the show will be live every Monday, 7 p.m. Pacific, here on BBS Radio, station number 2, 7 p.m. Pacific, for On the Double with the Double S Express.
Hey, Sean, why don't you tell the guests there how they can get a hold of us and you know, on Twitter and on the
Absolutely,
World Wide
a lot. A lot of options out there on the World Wide Web, one being our show page at BBS Radio, bbsradio.com/onthedouble. And from there, there are links to our website, which is double-s-express.com. We have email addresses. You can drop us a line. Talk to us about the show. Tell us your thoughts. Suggest who you might want to hear as guests. My email address is Sean, S-H-A-W-N, at double-s-express.com. Sean Boyd is his first name, Sean, S-E-A-N, at double-s-express.com. And we also have a Double S Express Facebook page you can like for all the latest information, as well as a Twitter page to follow as well, at Double S Express.
Man, that's a lot of information, man.
Glad I had enough wind to get that out, definitely.
Yes.
Well, before we wrap up show number 2 for you here tonight, we definitely have to send our good thoughts and prayers and condolences to those that were affected today with the over a mile wide tornado near Oklahoma City.
Yeah, you know, our heartfelt condolences goes out to those people in Oklahoma and the tornado that's sweeping through that Midwest region. And so, you know, prayers go out.
You know, I heard an unbelievable story already coming out is that a mother took her kids, the one place she thought might be safe, and that was the bathtub. The only thing left intact were the people in that bathtub.
Yeah, you know, when you think of, you know, the things like that that happen, you know, your instincts take over, and it's, you know, it's the survival of the fittest and, you know, just doing, you know, the critical things to make sure that your family is safe. And, you know, for those that have passed on and lost their lives, again, we send huge thoughts and prayers out to the families. You know, just hope for speedy recovery.
Definitely a tough time for folks in and around Oklahoma City and the suburbs that got hit hard today, and can't even imagine what that would be like and don't ever want to have to, and I'm sure everybody there was thinking the same thing until today.
Yeah.
All right, Sean Boyd, down in Northern California, Sean Wally in Eastern Washington. Show number 2 is in the books, Sean.
Yeah, you know, and so, you know, things are just getting started. And again, you know, Sean Wally gave you all the information to connect with us. And, of course, like us on Facebook. Go on Double S Express or type in Double S Express and like us on Facebook as well. You know, there's some great things going on down here. One of the things I'm excited about, Sean, is that tomorrow there's a a big to-do going on in Alameda. One Charles Woodson coming back and visiting the Raiders facility. And so, you know, you want to talk about a team that's really looking to get themselves on a roll. You know, you have some of the players that have joined in and thrown out tweets and sent messages out to say, hey, fans, why don't you show up in Alameda and show Charles Woodson some love and how much you appreciate him. Maybe that'll help him make the decision. Of course, Charles Woodson played with the Raiders for 8 years, went on to the Green Bay Packers, done some great things, won a Super Bowl title with them. Played 7 years with them, but man, it'd be real cool to see if Charles comes back in his career as an Oakland Raider.
Well, Sean, I think we might be setting history here, as I believe we have a caller on the line. Let's see if we can reach out to Poy in Duval. Poy, are you there?
Poy? It's Corey.
That's exactly what I thought, but I figured you might have been using an alias. Corey and Duval, what can we do for you, sir?
Hey, I just wanted to be the first caller.
You are definitely going down in history, Corey. Welcome to On the Double with the Double S Express.
Do I win anything?
Yeah, Corey, you have a sports question?
Yeah, what do you guys think about the whole Seahawks and those PED scandals that keeps coming up, and now with Josh Portis getting that DUI?
Yeah, well, man, I believe there's, what, five or six Seahawks that have had some run-ins with the performance-enhancing drugs. And, you know, for me, you know, I don't look to the players as much as I do looking at, you know, at Pete Carroll. At some point, as the head coach, at some point he has to take on the responsibility and do his due diligence as far as, you know, setting precedents for this team. And so, you know, yeah, of course the players always have this type of temptation coming up, and, you know, they're not supposed to do these things. But at the same time, you know, as the leader of that football team, being the head coach, there has to be some types of mandates that come out outside of what the NFL gives, and I just haven't seen or heard that from Pete Carroll just yet. Sean, what do you think?
Well, both John Schneider and Pete Carroll have given interviews in the last couple of days, and they are going to address that more, and at some point the player needs to be held accountable, and the coach, the GM, the president, they can't be around that player 24/7 feeding them and giving them their water and making sure that, you know, they're only putting proper things in their body. And for Bruce Irvin to get popped for Adderall after what happened last season with Brandon Browner, Richard Sherman, and now for Irvin to do this, it just doesn't make a lot of sense.
No, because eventually you'll get caught.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, eventually, if you continue to do these things, you know, you get caught. I don't know if it's a random drug test or, you know, if it's something mandatory that comes out. Either way, it's something that you don't want to mess with. And, you know, and again, Sean, these and Corey, these are guys that they're not slouches. These guys are perennial guys. We're talking about Pro Bowlers and you know, the top guys on your team. So, you know, I'm thinking, you know, that, you know, the front offices really have to get a hold of this before, you know, the rep gets bad.
I think something has to be done league-wide for Adderall, not just with the Seahawks, because it's an issue for more teams than just in the Northwest. And maybe it's an issue of, A, how are they getting it? B, why are they thinking they need it? And, you know, maybe harder penalties and fines, not only from the league, but the team needs to also come down and draw that line and say, hey, you crossed it. You're not only going to be suspended for 4 games, maybe we're going to add to it.
Yeah, definitely. I agree.
And then even the league is going to, the NFL even wants to fine the Seattle Seahawks for this too, because they've, of how many they've had. It was like five or six players now.
Yeah, and so it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how the league handles this, if they're going to, you know, come down with a strong hammer and, you know, make an example of Seattle. I hope not, you know, because you don't wish that on any team. At the same time, you know, I hope that Seattle gets this right as far as, you know, coming up with their own internal discipline, you know, just to prove to the league that, you know, hey, this is something that we don't condone as well. You know, we don't win our games because, you know, we cheat. You know, this is just something that, you know, we need to get a hold of. So, Corey, yeah, thanks for calling in, man, and being our first caller. And so,
No problem.
I tell you what, I'm going to have Doug, he's our engineer, he'll get your information there, and we'll definitely have to send some out to you. But, thanks for being our first caller.
Good. No problem.
All right. So, man, there you have it, Sean. Caller number one, Corey, giving us a call. Having some Seahawk questions. I know there are a lot of Seahawk fans out there, especially that are friends and like our Facebook on the Double S Express Facebook page. Any other Seahawk fans or 49ers? I know there are 49ers out there and Raiders as well. There better be a lot of Raider fans out there for my sake. But anything, any questions that you have, go ahead and call in, whether it's football, baseball, basketball, golf, lacrosse. I always say that. You name it. You know, we'll be willing to answer those questions for you. Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. I'm Sean Boyd down in Elk Grove, California. Sean Wally up in the Tri-Cities. Hey, man, that was a great show today.
Absolutely. We had Fernando Viña, 12-year Major League Baseball player, started and ended his career with the Seattle Mariners, and 15-year NFL quarterback John Kitna doing great things in the Pacific Northwest as football coach at Lincoln High School in Tacoma.
Yeah, you know, again, you know, two awesome people, and so I'm glad to be a part of their lives and some of the things that they're doing. And so, you know, hey, it is great to have them on the show. And, of course, we had Corey Collin, first caller, man. And, hey, sky's the limit, Sean.
Absolutely. A great show today with big-time guests. That's going to wrap up show number two for On the Double with the Double S Express. Big thank you to Fernando Viña and John Kitna being our big-time guests today. And as well, Corey in Duval, Washington, in the record books, our first caller on the double.
Yeah, and also a special thanks to our engineer, Doug Newsom, Don Newsom as well. And, you know, a special shout-out to the Double S Express fans. You know, keep those questions coming in. Any ideas, you know, let us know.
Absolutely. Drop us an email. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter for all the information on the double with the Double S Express. We'll be back next Monday, 7 p.m. Pacific, with more big-time guests. Sean, when are we going to reveal who those guests are?
Man, you know, that will be as early as tomorrow. So if you guys go on our webpage tomorrow, you'll find out who those guests are. And, you know, expect another exciting show.
All right. That is the voice of Sean Boyd. I am Sean Wally. This is On the Double with the Double S Express. Thanks very much for listening. And we'll talk to you again Monday, next Monday night, 7 p.m. Pacific, on the Double with the Double S Express here on BBSRadio.com.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for some more great sports talk and big-time guests on the Double with the Double S Express.